And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 312, part trace three of the outfield preview for the 2026 fantasy baseball season. This will wrap up the outfield for us. We'll head to the mound next week to do some starting pitching, some relief pitching, and much more to get you ready for the 2026 fantasy baseball season. But before we get to that, you can find me on Twitter at BDEntric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How are we doing, my friend?
It's part trois. Part trois. Bubba.
Part trois. Sorry.
Got to freshen up on my French every year or so.
I live in California. It's race.
Yeah. Same here. I'm good, man. We booked our flights to Vegas today. That's something to look forward to.
Raise the price on
Patreon. Maybe a week too late, but yeah. That's okay. Good to get it booked. I think we've got everything set for our Vegas trip, March 19th through 22nd. So, yep. Actually, 2 months from today, we'll be flying back. That'll be a tough.
It'll be a tough flight. Real tough flight.
Re-entry.
Yeah, but we whatever. Have to. And now it's time to plan what we're doing in Vegas because it's already pretty slammed. So we have to figure out like logistically what's going to take.
So we're flying in Thursday night. Mm-hmm. Just kind of hang out, whatever. Friday morning, maybe tout wars if they're going to do a draft. Friday afternoon is our big auction. Yep. Saturday, listeners probably don't care, but Saturday, actually, listeners may care about this. We're going to do some type of main event. We're not going to be in the main event, but we're going to cover it similar to last year and do a live show or a podcast, something, some type of content out of main event Saturday. Luke Combs Saturday night, Vegas Listener League on Sunday, most likely. We will email you guys about that in Vegas and then fly home. So it's going to be packed. It's going
to
be fun.
I know a couple of people have reached out. They'd like to be on the show that we do. So you have to make sure we.
Oh, for on Saturday?
Yeah, get some stuff figured out. Yeah, so I got some more people. Well, because there's a certain one time that's making his Vegas debut. He'll be at the Champions Table on Friday. He'll be drafted in the main event. He wants to talk, he said, in person with us. So he wants to have a beer and chat. So that could be a good time.
Bring his dog. Bring his dog. That could work.
Could bring his dog. I've never.
I'm kidding.
But,
I'm kidding.
I know. But it's going to be a great time. I look forward to it. It goes by way too quick, but it's going to be a great time to catch up with people, do some drafting. And it's weird. I know the GAM listeners probably don't care, but we'll get to outfield part three. This will be more entertaining. Trust me.
outfield part three is a little rough,
red,
guys.
A lot of Indiana Hoosiers red on this sheet, folks. Yeah. Like the fact that we're doing that auction on Friday, I think about like strategy stuff a lot now, a lot more than I do probably for any other draft I've ever done already. And it's in my brain every time I'm doing a show or I'm listening to something. I start thinking, okay, could I get this guy through for a cheap price? Like, is this a guy I could throw out? Should I throw his person out just to make money? Like, this is in my brain right now. See? And we're like 2 months out.
I mean, you haven't done a draft that big.
This is my first big draft. This is my biggest draft I've ever done is like $500. So this will be a big jump for me.
Yeah. I've done the mains, my atrocious track record in the mains, but, This will be up there. This will be, I think, more fun too. Obviously, in person auction, can't beat it.
Yep, looking forward to it. Last bit of housekeeping. This will be the last time we mention the online listener leagues. Like we'll mention the Vegas one a few times if we need people to fill in there. But the online listener leagues, Ryan, they're full. They're full.
We just pretty much entirely of paid Patreon folks. So we appreciate everyone who signed up for the leagues. They're going to be a blast. We are going to don our tuxedo t-shirts on Friday and do a little unveiling show to unveil who's all in what leagues for the listener league. So I'm stoked, man. Good to get it done. We're going to encourage you all to sign up as quickly as you can once we get the actual links from the NFBC to get in there and get it done with. But it's going to be 10 days in the second half of February that are going to be a lot of fun, and stoked that we were able to fill the 10 leagues pretty much with all Patreon folks, and that makes it even more of a kind of a community listener league type thing. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Eight of the 10 leagues will be live streamed. So there's just going to be a ton of good info, and the live streams will be public. I think speaking out of turn, but yeah. Usually you're doing public. Just so you know, if you're not in the leagues, but you're interested in just kind of auction strategy and auction streaming, you will have eight streams times what, 4 hours each. You will have 32 hours of video programming to help prep.
You're welcome. No, but yeah. Yes, you'll have plenty of that to laugh at, to learn, whatever you prefer. But there'll be plenty of that. Just a quick reminder, shout out to Baseball HQ for, like, every league has their prizes for first, second, and third, their monetary prizes. But thanks to Baseball HQ for joining up with us again. To every league winner gets a subscription to Baseball HQ, and the overall winner gets a FPAS registration. So thanks again for supporting the boys over here. We appreciate that.
Yep, absolutely. And again, just real quick, promo code Bubba26 gets you $10 off a Baseball HQ draft prep subscription, which is full site access to content, tools, projections through the end of April. So if you've been on the fence about checking out HQ, you can use Bubba26, not Bloom26, Bubba26, get your $10 off for draft prep, and go check them out. Highly recommended, of course.
Yep, very much so. All right, enough of that for you guys. We'll get to the baseball for you now. News and notes. We were pretty pumped last episode. There was a good chunk of notes. Lou Bob was traded like right before the show, like an hour before the show. We've got some more big news coming up here. Cody Bellinger back in the Bronx, which is one thing you and many others have all said. He needs to be in the Bronx. This is the best spot for him in the Bronx. We've talked about his pulled fly balls, all these things. He fits that stadium perfectly. So Belly Bombs is back in the Bronx, and that is a great thing, especially for a guy that's got an ADP of around 92 over the last 7 days. I'm imagining that goes up. It hasn't yet, but I imagine it'll go up.
Yeah, I would expect. I'll run the ADP tracker again in the morning to get yesterday's drafts. I would expect at least some, I don't know, maybe a round, half round, something like that. I would say a modest increase. I feel like the prevailing wisdom was that Bellinger was going to re-sign. I was on the fence. I don't think I have any Bellinger yet, but I'm much more interested now that that he has re-signed with the Yankees, even though the price might be a little bit more expensive, but that's fine. 18 of 29 homers last season for Cody Bellinger in Yankee Stadium. Yankees let him run a little bit with the 13 steals. And just, again, like you said, the pull hitting profile with a really good strikeout rate. Bellinger puts the ball in play, he hits the ball in the air, and he pulls it. And that's exactly what you need for a lefty in Yankee Stadium. So I don't see why, honestly, Cody Bellinger couldn't repeat a lot of what he did in 2025, you know, assuming he can stay healthy and get to 650 plate appearances.
Yeah, I agree. It's a great landing spot, obviously. He should be able to, in theory, thrive in this one. Not sure why he wouldn't when we're looking at that. Now he's going to slot back into the left field spot, which it's been real, Jason Dominguez. It really has. It's been real.
Yeah, RIP. Damn.
There's really nowhere. There's no room at the end for Jason Dominguez, I guess, until Giancarlo maybe gets hurt or something, God forbid, happens to Aaron Judge. Those are the things that need to take place for this. And one usually takes place once a year at least, so there's a chance. But for like full-time fantasy value, Jason Dominguez is in purgatory at the moment, it feels like.
He is.
All right, the Mets. They made the Lou Bob trade on Tuesday. They're back at it again. The Mets traded for a guy near and dear to my heart, Freddy Peralta. He is going to be a New York Met now. Traded to the Mets with Tobias Byers, which is no small thing if you think about pitching depth at least. But the Brewers got two big-time prospects back. They got Jet Williams and Brandon Sproat. Jet Williams is a shortstop. He'll find his way to the bigs sooner than later. And Brandon Sproat, we saw some good last year, some struggles, young pitcher, but they need help in that rotation in Milwaukee. So how do you assess this move for fantasy?
I don't know. For Freddie, it doesn't really move the needle much for me. I mean, Freddie's still really good. I don't think it matters too much where he is pitching. He's going from a winning team to a winning team. So that doesn't really matter. Sproat probably is the biggest gainer. Assuming he pitches well in the spring, he could certainly contend for a rotation spot with Milwaukee. So I don't know. That's about all I have on it.
Sproat could contend. You know who else could contend? Logan Henderson might be back in our life. That's a possibility. Perhaps, yeah. As well.
Yep.
Logan Henderson's ADP is 293 over the last week. He went 253 in the most recent draft on the draft tracker, so he moved up a bit. Sproat's still past 500. It'll be up for grabs, but in reality, you got Woodruff. How many innings is he actually going to throw? You got the Miz. Priester's been their workhorse. The two named Chad Patrick and Logan Henderson. So Sproat, even if he doesn't start the season in the rotation, should get plenty of run, one would imagine. The innings have been there for him last season. On the Mets side, it'll be interesting to see what they do. I just want to throw that out there because now you got Freddie, you got McClain. Peterson just will be there to eat up innings. Yet Clay Holmes, Sean Manaea, and Kodai Senga for three spots. I could see another trade taking place in New York. Or they six-man it, or they decide, okay, someone's got to go down and add depth later on type thing. But the Mets rotation is still a little bit in flux to me.
Yeah, a lot of it's a pretty rough back end of the rotation there, especially if Manaea is not right. Like that, I think that's a big wild card for them.
Yep. So something else to monitor, but you could take some shots in draft season, but they got a lot riskier than they once were. Another big trade that happened on Thursday, the Washington Nationals. I did not see this one coming. I went to a meeting, came out. Wow. Washington Nationals traded Mackenzie Gore to the Texas Rangers for a fleet of prospects. Gavin Fien, Devin Fitzgerald. That's with the hyphen, not one word. Alejandro Rosario, Abimelech Ortiz, and Yeremy Cabrera. You laugh, I have to do it. So you just
that wasn't bad.
Yeah, so that's quite the haul. I know like our buddy Sokolsky was pretty impressed by the amount of players they got back. So yeah. What's your takeaway here? Like Gore's Gore. He's going to pitch in that rotation. His whip's going to be 1-4, and you're going to deal with it. Maybe things get tweaked. Who knows? But major haul here for the Nats.
Major haul for the Nats. Probably not too much in terms of like 2026 redraft relevance. I think probably the most relevant player is, I'll just call him Abimelech Ortiz at first base, just because that door is slightly ajar at first base. I checked out at least I'm halfway through your Nats preview, which ironically released hours before the trade today with Lauren Auerbach. And you guys were talking about Luis Garcia kind of getting reps over there at first base. So that could still happen. But Abby Ortiz is at least somebody. Sokolsky's write-up in our draft kit was pretty glowing on Ortiz, and I think somebody who in the 40s rounds of draft and holds, not someone you're going to draft in Fab, of course, but someone maybe for the second half of the season as injuries pile up or there's a spot at first base. Abimelech Ortiz is actually a decent pickup when I was kind of digging into him and reading Martin's prospect report from earlier today. 133 WRC plus at AAA this year. That's really good. But it was it's only 165 plate appearance. So I think he needs a little bit more time in AAA, but good power, good speed, or good power at least. Hit tool. You like that. So Abby Ortiz is someone late 40s probably in draft and holds you may take a stab at.
ADP 724 over the last seven.
Yep.
He's gone as high as 647, as low as 746. So there's a range. But yeah, people have been slowly getting on him of late. So something to keep in mind. I wanted to throw this
out. You like Gore more now? Or I mean, it's a slight park improvement.
It's a massive park improvement. That ballpark's pitch is very pitcher friendly.
Yeah. Maybe Texas just sees something. I mean, you know, maybe a change of scenery for Mackenzie Gore, who's uber talented. Yeah.
Well, the Rangers, for one, they need rotational because you got DeGrom, you got Eovaldi. Like, we love them, but let's also be real. Do we trust them the whole season? So now you have Gore, which at least we've seen him pitch. Like, even though he had the forearm issue last year, he came back and pitched. Jack Leiter, I like, but again, he's young. Like, in their fifth is Jacob Latz, who I like, but how many? Like, so there was a lot. They needed another guy that could, quote unquote, be a workhorse if he stays healthy. They don't have a lot of that right now. And so makes a ton of sense for them because their offense isn't great, but it'll be more serviceable than I think people think, at least the top half of it. So Gore helps out a lot. The ballpark does improve. It's like if he can't control the whip issues, it's going to be ups and downs, but I think he'll still be just fine. Like, can you imagine now? I know it's a balanced schedule, but he still gets a good dose of the Angels now. Like, that is going to help tremendously. Stuff like that can't suck. So I like that.
Unless he walks all of them.
Yeah, that's always possible. I do want to throw this out there, though. I saw this tweet come through a couple hours before the show, so I want to pull it back up. It's like, you know, it's in a vacuum, but it's fun. The Nationals updated Juan Soto trade. So we love the
Hall. Oh, God, it'll never die. Yeah,
it's great because someone quote tweeted and said, this tree is going to be great to watch for the next, like, 45 years, type thing, because they're going to keep trading them, basically. Because the top one, C.J. Abrams, he'll probably get traded in like 2 years for the stud shortstop they got to play. Yep. But so Soto trade, what's left on the Nats right now? C.J. Abrams, James Wood, Robert Hassel III. That's all pretty good. Because Mackenzie Gore, for those that don't know, that's what triggered this right now. They got Jarlin Susana, who I believe came over from another trade recently. And then the Gavin Fien, Alejandro Rosario, Devin Fitzgerald, Jeremy, and then Abby. Like, they all came over. So they ended up getting the number 87 overall prospect and the 5 in the top 20 for the Rangers. None of them were in the top 100 in baseball, to clarify that. But they were still pretty decent prospects. I know they're all within the top, like, 160, I think, or something. They're all pretty good in that regard. But, yes, it's just funny watching how the bulk of it continues to grow for the Juan Soto trade.
Maybe the circle will complete.
Juan Soto's not even there anymore.
You say, well, but Juan Soto, maybe in 10 years, will be traded back to the Nats and the circle is complete.
Oh, the circle of life. We'll have a Lion King moment. It'll be great. But, so Mackenzie Gore is a Ranger. A lot of prospects to the Nats. And then I guess the other part we didn't really mention, and maybe it's not even relevant at this point, but when I did do the Nats preview, it's like, we love the offense. Like, we really like the offense.
Oof.
But that pitching staff with Gore was like the only thing. Now it's Cade Cavalli, who threw less than 50 innings in the bigs last year, first year back from surgery. The good Lord. Jake Irvin.
Is there number two? The good Lord?
That's according to Roster Resource. Jake Irvin, who wasn't even the starting five when I recorded the show yesterday. Now he's in there. And then you have Josiah Gray coming back from a year and a half absence. And then Foster Griffin, who they picked up from overseas.
Yeah.
So the rotation is dreadful.
I can see our FAD previews every week. We talk about stream against. It's going to be pretty juicy schedules, whoever's facing the Nats. That's brutal. It was already, right. That's a good point. It was already bad. And without Gore, it's.
Yeah. Like, I'm looking at the minors. So Jake Elder's a guy we've heard of before. Luis Perales pitched in the AFL. But remember Andrew Alvarez? I was trying to convince you he was a
shooter
last year.
Yeah.
And then
unsuccessfully, by the way.
Mitchell Parker is still on the table. So
who I have praised as a late draft and hold lefty streaming target.
Oh, he will get his chances. Oh, yeah. And then let's not forget, in April of last year, Tommy John surgery for DJ Hurst. Maybe he gets a late renaissance.
That's right.
So it's ugly. It's ugly on the pitching side for the Nats. Hitting good, pitching really bad in Washington.
Who's who of names? That's that's a good exercise.
I was scrolling through that on the Nats preview, just going, and then like a day later, or the day it released, like a day after recording, Gore gets traded. I'm like, even worse.
But, yeah, tough season.
All right, last bit of news here. A lot less important compared to the first two, but Yoan Moncada re-signs with the Angels to a one-year deal. Like, we liked Moncada last year because he actually was swinging it well when healthy, but he seemed like he was always hurt. At least well enough for a streaming in 15. So let me clarify that real quick. So that was serviceable. So I want to mention that, get your thoughts there. But also, originally Christian Moore was going to play third, and Vaughn Grissom was going to play second. Now with this move, a lot can change, but now Christian Moore is projected to play second, Vaughn Grissom to the bench. Just want to throw that out there. Deep league DC type stuff, but it does change a few things if you're still drafting.
Yeah, I mean, 15 teamers, Yoan Moncada, while healthy, is relevant. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, he's going to hit probably in the middle of that order.
I agree.
And like, that upper half of the Angels order isn't awful, right? It's Neto, it's Adele, it's Shenwell gets on base, it's Trout. How could I forget Trout when he's healthy? So that could actually work. 14% barrel rate for Yoan Moncada last year, 12 homers and 289 plate appearances, and hit 234 only, but a lot of the kind of underlying stuff says Yoan Moncada is like a 250 hitter. I don't know if I'm drafting Yoan Moncada in 15 team fab leagues. Maybe I am, but definitely in drafting holes. That could be a, I don't want to say a key piece, but a piece of something.
Yep.
That is Jorge true, Soler. Man. That's right. Kevin in the chat says solar power. You never know.
And as Scott Burke says, Moncada's the missing piece. The Angels need to get back to the playoffs.
Yeah, it's that type of piece for sure. Something like that.
And then last thing I'll mention, just because I was checking something on Twitter for one of the trades, the newest thing at the top of my feed, the Nationals have shopped C.J. Abrams and Jacob Young. So the Nats might not be done yet, which is
Abrams is tricky with their window. Like,
yeah,
he's a little older than a lot of their other guys. So. Yeah,
yep. So we'll see if we get to talk about that next week, but time will tell. All right, let's get after it. Let's talk outfield part trois, you said?
Part trois.
What are we looking at here? Because that's a whole lot of who's your red.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, predictably so, right? We're looking at outfield 61 through 90. So to kind of level set where we're at in the draft, this is like pick 250. Is outfielder number 61 your guy, Mickey Moniak? Pick 250 all the way down to 380. Jonathan India rounds us out as outfield 90. So this is starting to get into the end game. This is where you're kind of getting hopefully your fifth outfielder or a reserve outfielder at this point. Similar theme to our other episodes, our outlook on outfield very much changes whether it's a fab league or a draft and hold league. In a draft and hold league, you're still gonna have to draft probably 2-3 of these guys, but just because you need that outfield depth, you need 11 ish outfielders on a draft and hold team. In a fab league, maybe you're taking two, but you're kind of churning those guys on waivers, because at least in our experience doing these fab previews every Thursday the last 2 years, just usually some decent streaming outfield options available on fab. There's a few guys I like. So yeah, we'll do our normal kind of group of five and run through these guys. But this is really where playing time starts to fall off. We've talked about Platoonsville on previous episodes. You're definitely starting to see that. And yeah, just a lot of red on this. A couple batting average sources, couple speed sources if you're desperate. A couple under the radar ones, in my opinion, that we'll talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And not much power. Like after our top three here of Moniak, Grisham, and Stanton, there is no one else on this list projected to hit more than 15 home runs. Matt Wallner's the other one. So it's and some of that is playing time driven, because you're starting to get into these part-time platoon players.
Yes, Platoonville. So. Yeah, the platoon has a big part here, because there's players you could see being actually viable if they got more playing time. Because there is some power, there is some speed averages. There's not a lot of killer averages, surprisingly enough. Like most of it's 240 and above, so it's not drowning you, but it's a lot of two to three category guys, and that's what you expect as you get to deep parts of the draft. Yep. But it's the platoons, I think, are having a gigantic part to do with this when we get there. All right, let's get after it. 61 through 65, ADP 253 to 271. Mickey Moniak, Trent Grisham, Giancarlo Stanton. It's funny, he's going three picks after Trent Grisham. TJ Friedl, Ryan O'Hearn. Honestly, I don't hate this pocket. We haven't got to the complete hate section yet, and it makes sense. It's the first pocket, but I don't mind most of these guys, honestly.
I actually like the next pocket a lot more, the next group of five a lot more than this one. Outside of Moniak, maybe Grisham, I'm not too enthused with this group. Moniak for me is probably the best buy on this list. Again, he's the most expensive. He is outfielder number 61. Just really nice improvements in concurrently both power and strikeout rate last year for Moniak. We all know this is kind of a post hype sleeper who's still just 28, so young enough to legitimately kind of think last year was a step forward that he can sustain. You're gonna have issues with splits, not only left right but with home road. Like Mickey Moniak is horrendous on the road and horrendous against lefties, so there may be some weeks where you're not going to start him, but I think most of the time, this projection for Moniak of 260, 20 homers, 9 steals, like that's pretty good to get at a 250 ADP.
Yep. Yeah, no, I love me some Mickey. That's very, very clear. So if you, as an outfielder 5, it's not bad. You, like you said, the platoon situation is very real. So you almost have to have a second outfielder on your, at least a decent one on your bench to move him in and out with if you want to play that game. But it can be profitable, as you see. You see the projection. We saw the stat line from him last year. I'm just going to throw it out there, and I know you're going to poo-poo this more likely than not, but if healthy, Giancarlo at this price is awesome. And it's a fab play for me because if he gets hurt, you can move on. Like, I picked him up in fab everywhere last year. But as an outfielder 5 for what he could do in the power department, I love. Yeah. I know in years past, his average has been rough, but he hit 273 last year in 77 games. Like, he missed all that time early. But in 77 games, 273, 24 homers, 36 runs, 66 RBIs.
Yeah.
I remember we talked about weeks where it was like, hey, he might only play 1 of 3 games, but he still mashed so much. You kept him. He had a near 22% barrel rate and a 55% hard hit rate last year. Like, he overachieved. There's no doubt about that. But the power has always been legit from Giancarlo. When healthy, it's 24, 27, 24, 31, 35. Those are his home runs. Those play as an outfielder 5, no matter how many games you play.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of how do you balance it out. So at this ADP, I know it's a beating a dead horse. Power, it's harder and harder to find, and it's at end of the season. It's a big deal. It's a big missing piece for a lot of teams that don't win money. So a Giancarlo right here, I can definitely see trying to build around as an outfielder 5.
Yeah, I could see that.
He's not util only for once.
Right. He is actually outfield eligible. And I think the later we get into spring, assuming Giancarlo makes it, I think the price will go higher because if he's healthy on opening day, I mean, there you go. Last year it was double tennis elbow.
Yes, double tennis elbow.
Which, I laughed at last year, but I have tennis elbow right now. And dude, it is Arma's brutal, man. I can't hit a drive right now. So that's just one tennis elbow. So I feel for Stanton, man, with double tennis elbow, you're in bubble wrap. It's brutal.
Yeah. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Like, I'm usually, I can just avoid because he usually costs a lot more and he's util on like a lot of factors, but I'm like,
yeah,
what he did last year, I could see being viable.
So what about Stanton versus Grisham? Just right next to each other there, similar projections.
I'll take Stanton. Like, Grisham, okay. I get Grisham. I think obviously he's going to regress some to what's the question. He was still very good. Ben did open my eyes when we talked about him really early after the season ended. Like, if you look at his Steamer 600 year after year, his per plate appearance has always been good. He just never really got the per plate appearances. He got them last year. So Trent could be fine. I think Stanton's ceiling just blows Trent out of the water, but it's a lot of what ifs, that's for sure. And at this point, like, we're talking about churning our fifth outfielder. Mm-hmm. I don't mind trying to churn Giancarlo Stanton.
Yep. Yep. It's fair.
Like, you just need to know if you draft him, you need to be comfortable going, okay, I'm going to drop him. That's something that might be hard for certain people because you see that ceiling. You need to be willing to be dropping Giancarlo Stanton.
Or the worst, as Kevin puts in the chat, is maddening, is, yeah, the everyday line, not everyday, the unexpected days off, as Kevin says, when he's locked in your league. You will get periodic days off with Stanton.
Yeah, that's what I said earlier. We talked about it. We were setting, like, our weekly previews, and eventually we said, screw it, you just play him. And even 3 games a week, but you hope for at least 4, and he still just mashes.
Yep. Yep.
Anybody else in this range? Like, Friedel's still projected to lead off, and, you know, he's got his moments. Ryan O'Hearn's in Pittsburgh. I love O'Hearn, but in Pittsburgh is my only concern. So anything else in this range?
And probably a platoon in Pittsburgh. Eric says O'Hearn's a value, being first base outfield helps. It does. I don't know. I just don't see much upside with O'Hearn at this point. And Friedel's fine. He's a compiler who's not very good and doesn't really do anything. So he's a little bit of a Bob. Like, what would you say you do here? He just, he does pile up plate appearances, or at least he did last year. Before that, Friedel, had 372 combined plate appearances in 2024, 554 the year before that. But 2025 for Friedel, 685 plate appearances. That sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yep. So. All right, 66 through 70, the new Los Angeles Angel of Anaheim, Josh Lowe, Jung-Hoo Lee, back in California, if you're curious. Justin Crawford, Tommy Edman, and Dylan Beavers. Like, ooh, I'm curious to see you said you like this range a lot, so I'm gonna give you the floor here. Like, I can see arguments for all five of them, so I want to hear what your arguments are.
Yeah, I like, and obviously there's injury with Josh Lowe, but a healthy Josh Lowe is someone who I think can go 15-30 with a semi-decent batting average in Tampa. So yes, he's going to get hurt at some point. It's going to be some type of oblique injury. You hope it doesn't happen in April, but we'll see. But Josh Lowe, I think in terms of a ceiling, it's very nice to go after at 278. Justin Crawford. So yes, like,
I was hoping you'd mention him.
Yeah, I think he's probably my favorite buy of this group. Everyone talks about Chandler Simpson going, I don't know, we talked about in the last episode, 100 picks earlier. I think Justin Crawford has a better chance of staying in the lineup than Chandler Simpson does, and could be just as effective on the base pass as Chandler Simpson and do just as good of a job with batting average and has a little bit more pop. Like, I think Justin Crawford's actually probably better than Chandler Simpson, both fantasy, well, definitely in real life, because he's a really good defender. And I think Justin Crawford is going to be the starting center fielder for Philadelphia. And he can run, man. I just think this is a time where I'm okay saying, all right, let me patch up stolen bases and get a rabbit at pick 290.
Yes, we are all shocked of Bloom's take here. But
hey.
I agree with you. I did my Phillies preview pod today. That'll be out early next week due to scheduling and other backup pods. But Justin Crawford was a very insightful conversation that I had with Eric Halterman.
Okay.
He opened my eyes to the fact that, A, he should start with the team. The team needs him to play out there. If you look at their options, it's just bad to begin with. He has not, like, he played a whole season at AAA last year. He's going to be 22, so he's still young, but the dude can run crazy. He says 40 steals should be easy if he plays all season. He actually has good plate discipline, strikes out less than 20%. Actually, last year walked almost 12%.
Yep.
You love to see that. Now, that's AAA still, but still, like, if half of that translates, you're happy. You mentioned the batting average essentially over 300 time and time again. People will point to the high BABIPs, but that is due to a man that hits the ball on the ground
and is fast as hell.
60% of the time.
Yeah, and is fast. Like
last year's 59.4, 60.9, 61.3. There was levels of the matter, 75%. The dude hits it on the ground and runs. Like, I think Eric said it best. If there's always those old men that watch stuff from the old days, goes, just hit it on the ground, you're fast. That's they all, like, they'll yell, this is the guy that you want to hit it on the ground and let him run. Because, and then you do the flip side, he's hitting ninth, so it flips over to the top of that order. Tons of run production. I think there is a lot here, and at 290, it doesn't cost you a dang thing. Like, if for some reason, if he flops and goes back to AAA, you drop it. Unlike you mentioned the guy that we're not going to draft at all. Like, I think he's got a better chance to go to AAA at Simpson than Crawford, like you said. I agree with you. So I think if you need late steals and a good batting average combo, this is good. And he could sneak and run. So he could be a three category guy here. Like, he's not going to hit double digit home runs unless some miracle happens. And he's 22. So maybe things change in that regard. You kind of want him to not change. You want the profile to stay the same for what you're drafting. But I agree. There is a very intriguing outcome here from Justin Crawford that could really help a fantasy team. There's no doubt about that.
See, man, I like the youths. I'm good with the youths.
Every once in a while, you do. Who else? You're probably a Tommy Edman fan. That's totally a you play. That is you to a T. What else do you like in this range?
That's it. But I mean, I really like three out of the five. I really like Josh Lowe. Really like Justin Crawford, and I really like Tommy Edman. So, if I need my fifth outfielder, I'm depending on what my team needs are, or whatever. I'm thrilled to get one of those three. Jung-Hoo Lee, and I mean, you can talk about Lee, I guess. I mean, that's your guy, but Beavers, I don't know about playing time or sustainable skill over a full season either.
Yeah, Lee, I like a lot for real life baseball. I don't think his floor is really low. It feels like it's just, I don't think there's, if you get 15-15, you're stoked. I don't know for any more than that. So I'd rather take the chances on the Crawfords, the Josh Lowe going in front of them. Beavers, I want to love. I really do. I believe the skills are really, really good. He's another guy that's he's going to be 25 this year. We saw the season last year. AAA went 18-23, 4-2 in the bigs and a smaller sample. Like, throughout the minors, he hits the buck great. He's got power. He's got speed. it's the playing time, to your point. Like right now, there's a lot of outfield depth once again in Baltimore. He could platoon with Tyler O'Neill, with Jeremiah Jackson. There's a litany of potential platoon situations there. And that's the only thing. Like, if we start watching spring training and they start saying, hey, it's his gig, he's going to play at least 140 games, Dylan Beavers at 305 is awesome. Like, that's a really good play. Like, I think there is a 2020 guy there, I think, in reality. It just needs the playing time to get it. Like, if I knew he was going to play as much as Josh Lowe, I would take Dylan Beavers. So I just don't know if he's going to play that much. That's the question.
I'd take Lowe, but I'm not. Yeah. It's pick 300, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I just want to throw out Beavers. I like a lot. I think he's going slow because of the same concerns. So everyone's got the playing time concerns. All right, 71 through 75, Cedric Mullins, Matt Wallner, Evan Carter, Chase DeLauder, Victor Robles, 311 through 329. And yeah, not great, Bob.
Not great. I like Mullins. I mean, do you think Mullins will be a strong side platooner? Every day against right-handed pitching? Like, I think that's pretty good value at pick 311.
Right now, they have him playing by himself out there in center field. So, like, I still think he platoons with Johnny DeLuca. DeLuca is a really good defender. Yes. I do, but I'm willing to take him in the strong side of the platoon because even that's pretty much what he's done in the past. And he's getting you 17, 22, 18, 30. Like, he's at least a 15, 15 guy. Like, the numbers are very solid. The average sucks. Like, that's disappeared, but you're going to get a really good power speed guy. And he's supposed to hit in the middle of a Rays lineup. Potentially, like, I think that whole batting order on roster resource, there's a lot of flux there. Like, I don't want to see a lineup tracker from spring training to tell me if there's any consistencies to what the lineup looks like in Tampa Bay versus right-handed pitching.
It's off the table though. Can't do it. That would be nice.
It would be really nice to have something like that. Maybe I'll go look at some stats to figure that out. Yeah. But I do like Cedric Mullins at this price. If you want to take a shot.
Yeah, I made this point on the last show. We talked about Dalton Varsho with low batting average. Again, it's just so easy to get enamored with these guys and take three batting average sinks at the end of your draft and torpedo your bat. And Matt Wallner's going right next to Mullins, kind of the same thing, right? Projected for the same 229 batting average. Yeah, Wallner probably will get you some power. I don't mind Matt Wallner, but you got to really watch your batting average late in the draft. But it's interesting. In this group of five, you can get Mullins and Victor Robles, if you want speed. Mullins, probably more power, worse batting average. I actually like Victor Robles at price. You can get power with Matt Wallner, or you can shoot for the moon and shoot for a ceiling with Evan Carter and Chase DeLauder. So, like, there's different ways you can kind of go with this group at ADP 310 to 330 that, you know, if the stars align. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if one of these five, maybe even two of these five, are actually quite profitable. Which ones are they? I don't know. Probably not DeLauder. The guy just can't stay healthy. But I guess neither can Evan Carter. So
yeah, that's the problem.
Like, and this probably is not Matt Wallner. So I don't know. Maybe I'm talking myself out of it.
It's a great spot in a fab league for your fifth outfielder. Like, take a shot here. These guys could really produce, but also, like, easy drops if something goes wrong. Like, Evan Carter, back injury, Taste Lauder's hand fell off. Like, these are all very possible situations. Victor Robles throws a bat at a pitcher. Like, this all could take place. It's weird. Like, Matt Wallner, who I've always liked, I really don't have any interest in this year. I don't know what it is. Like, I just don't. To me, I'd rather go 40 picks earlier and take Giancarlo and take the risk. I know it's 40 picks. I know it's a big difference, but I'd rather just take the Giancarlo risk over Matt Wallner.
It's not. I mean, yeah, but it's really not. At this point in the draft, and, like, this is where you really start to veer from ADP as well, just from a general. Like, if you really like Evan Carter and you think he's going to stay healthy and he's going to pick 314 or 318, take him at 280, 290. It doesn't. ADP at this point is very there. There's wide ranges of where these guys go.
Yeah, and to be fair, there's only probably like three guys I like on the next 15 we're going to talk about, so that'll shuffle.
Yeah, buckle up, folks, for this next crew.
Real quick, though, I want to finish up this pocket because you said you are interested in Victor Robles, so I did want to talk about him because, you know, last year everybody loved him because he came over from Washington the year before, ran well. He saw 34 steals in 91 games, hit 307. Things were great. Last year, obviously, the nasty injury, but 32 games, one homer, six steals, 245. And I know it's a small sample, but it's almost more in line with what he's done his entire career.
Yep.
So my question to you is, do you believe it's his normal career thing and at this ADP that's still fine? Or do you think he could revert back to what we saw a little more of in 2024?
I'd say most likely Victor Robles reverts back to who he was. That's probably the most likely outcome. But I think there's a, what if there's a 30% chance Victor Robles is the guy we saw for the Mariners in 2024? Then this is an absolute bargain at 329, if not a full breakout, if Victor Robles is that guy. Last year was a complete lost season. I mean, yes, dislocated shoulder, like, and fluky, like, he ran. What damn was it? The Giant Stadium, right?
Yeah, it was damn fence in Saturday.
Yeah. You play in proper stadiums, and, you know.
They protect the fans and almost took the dude's shoulder off. It's just crazy. But then again, so this is, you know, get your guy territory. Yep. So I know the ADP, again, large chunk. We're talking almost 40 picks here. Would you rather have Victor Robles or Justin Crawford?
I would probably go Crawford.
Okay.
I'd probably go Crawford. I'll throw that out there. But I like both of them.
Yes, I like both go Crawford as well. All right. Let's do it. 76 through 80. Harrison Bader, still a free agent. Dominic Canzone. Jesus Sanchez. Victor Scott. Zach McKinstry. Ryan, I'll let you have the floor on this one. Where are
you at? I
do like a guy here, so that's
why. You know the home PA announcer when he announces, like, in basketball games, the road lineup? It's like this starting five, Bader, Canzone, Sanchez, and then, like, the Bulls comes up, Bulls music comes on.
Out of North Carolina. Oh, sorry, yeah, I got
that's you. Right, 6 foot six. Yep. You like one of these five?
Yes, I do.
Two of them don't have homes. Who do you like? Yes. Throwing it back to
you. If Harrison Bader,
no, Jesus Sanchez has a home, doesn't he?
Yeah, but they're trying to trade him, so we'll see how long that home stands. But he's on the strong side of the platoon for now, and if he sticks there, I like him a lot at this ADP. If he stays in the, because we have to accept platoons now, where you're drafting, this is what you're getting. Yes. Like, you accept it. And if he stays in Houston, and honestly, wherever he gets traded, he's probably still a strong side platoon starting outfielder. I don't mind Sanchez because you're going to get some speed and potentially a lot of power. Like, we've always seen some good glimpses. I don't hate him. I am intrigued. If Harrison Bader was signed, I'd like him at his ADP be higher too. I like Dominic Canzone. I really like Dominic Canzone at 330. He's going to be on the strong side of the platoon there for the Mariners. They completely bought, like, dedicated to him last year. 82 games, 11 homers, 3 steals, hit 300. That's the one thing I like. And again, maybe it was fluky. That's fine. But a 300 average, like, revert it to 270, 260, I'm cool. Throughout the minors, we've seen him hit over 20 home runs. We've seen him steal over 15 bases a few times. We've seen him hit for average throughout the minors. The dude's 28, so he's still kind of in his finding his prime, sea legs, whatever you want to call it. But I think there is something like 14.5% barrel rate, 50% hard hit rate. Didn't overachieve. He kind of underachieved in power if you look at certain metrics. Strong side of platoon, they're going to play him unless they bring someone else in, which Dylan DePoto can always do. That is a thing. But for now, like, there were times last year when he was still struggling, there was options in the minors. They stuck with him. He started to figure it out. And those weeks where there was a lot of righties, he was a beast at times. So Dominic Canzone at 330, like, I don't know what the total package is, but, like, the 16 homer, 4 steals projection, I feel like if he plays the entire season, plays 130 to 140 games, I think we're over 20 home runs and we're approaching at least 10 steals. Like, I hopefully more, because, like, the projections right now have him around 105 games. And they got him going, you know, the 16-4 you're seeing. I think you can boost it up 140 games. You're closer to 2010, and that's not bad at ADP 330.
All right. Decent case for it. I like that. And a very good point on just accepting platoons at this point in the draft, because that's what these guys are. And honestly, if you're an everyday player and you're this bad, you don't want to be on the team. I also think Harrison Bader is going to sign somewhere. This is a free agent discount. Pick 330. I mean, Harrison Bader last year got an OB, like, just in terms of real life baseball, because we are interested in where Harrison Bader signs. Last year it was a 346 OBP with 17 homers. Like, this is, this guy is still valuable. And I just think this is a, this is a nice little free agent slash it's getting into late January slash maybe there's a chance Harrison Bader doesn't sign and this is a wasted pick type of thinking kind of creeping into the marketplace. But fairly confident Bader will find a home, and fairly confident he'll be pretty good, pretty good power speed, and not like a total batting average sink like a Mullins or a Walner going a little bit earlier than Bader. So yeah, I could get behind Bader, Canzone, and Sanchez. Mm-hmm. Can't do Victor Scott.
Nope.
McKinstry had a fine year last year. I everything I see, I think that's probably a career year for Zach McKinstry, but certainly could be wrong.
Yeah, and I agree with the Bader. I've actually been taking him thinking he'll sign, obviously. Just, yeah, there's a few places that would stink, but more often than not, he'll be fine. There's one more note on Jesus Sanchez. Like, his platoon partner's Cam Smith, who he might need to actually be in AAA and get regular at-bats right now. Like, him sitting on the bench isn't great. So there's a world where Jesus Sanchez's platoon becomes even less of a thing, if that makes sense to anybody, at least for to start the season. He might get more run than we think, and we've seen him hit, you know, 18 and 16 and 20 and 24, 14, 13 last year. So you're going to get double digit power speed. It's just a matter of how many games and to what extent the batting average is, because he is really bad versus lefties. It's undeniable. But the platoon situation there, Cam Smith, like, Russell Withers opened my eyes to him on the preview. Like, it's, I knew it was bad from, you know, we follow it enough, but it's really bad. And he needs, and he's so young, he got rushed up there. Like, let the kid get some confidence back. So we'll see.
He's in the next group, Cam Smith.
Yes, he is. 81 through 85, ADP 342 to 354. Jordan Walker, man, is it ever going to happen with Jordan Walker? Like, is Fetch going to happen? Jake Mangum, Isaac Collins, who was almost a rookie of the year at one point last year, Brandon Marsh, and Cam Smith. This is quite the range. That's all I can say. So, yeah, I can't Jordan Walker anymore. Like, maybe he'll do it someday. I can't.
And it's funny you say that, and I agree with you. He's still 24 years old, man.
Oh, I know. He's young as heck. Like, it's going to happen someday, and we're going to be like, okay, there it is. But, like, maybe it will, yeah. Maybe it won't.
There's also the – and maybe it's a Joe Adell, yeah, type thing where it's, like, just randomly 8 years from now. But we have a very large sample of Jordan Walker, despite the age. At a certain point, it's like – we kind of know who you are and at this level. So I would think the Cardinals give Jordan Walker plenty of run. Like,
yeah, they have no reason not to.
They're not playing for anything this year. So sorry, Cardinals fans. I'm sure your Cardinal episode will be uplifting if you get Thompson again, but yes. I don't know. Isaac Collins, just another one where, like, I barely hear the guy during the season last year. I make fun of him and he just goes off. So along the Colson Montgomery, Maximo Acosta type vibes there. I don't know. Isaac Collins is whatever. Brandon Marsh is my favorite out of this group. Yeah. I know it's another platoon, but to your point, you know, do you want Jordan Walker in your lineup every day doing absolutely nothing? Or do you want Brandon Marsh in there three quarters of the time doing semi something? So I've ended up with Brandon Marsh on a ton of teams. I like the lineup. I like kind of just the general power speed that he brings and a batting average that may even help you in terms and not hurt you. So big strikeout rate improvements for Marsh last year, only 28 years old. I'm buying the over on this projection of 13 homers, 10 steals, and a 251 batting average. So I've ended up with a lot of Brandon Marsh. I like that value at 350.
Yeah, if you look like last year's 11 homers, 7 steals, kind of banged up a lot there. But year before, 16, 19, 249. Like, that would be tremendous at this point in the draft. You could do much worse things, like, you know, draft Jordan Walker. As Scott Burke says, for what it's worth, Walker went to drive line this season. There we go. There we go.
Maybe you should go to line drive, because Jordan Walker had a 14% line drive rate last year. That is terrible.
Nice. I love the dad jokes. The one guy I'm going to mention, if you want to start shooting for upside, I guess, is what I'll say. We made the Chandler Simpson jokes earlier. Jake Mangum has a little of that in him.
Yeah,
I'm going to say that. Like, he's a switch hitter, so maybe he doesn't platoon. Like, right now, of course, the Pirates have a lot going on, but he should get plenty of run there. And with Jake Mangum, we saw it with the Rays when he played a lot. Like, He was getting run even when we thought he shouldn't. Hit three homers, stole 27 bags in 118 games, hit 296. Throughout the minors, pretty much hit over 300 most of the time. Never hit more than nine homers, but always stole bags. Strike out 15% last year in his first big league season. So that's a really impressive. Again, he's an older, he was 29, so he's an older rookie last year. But we're talking about a guy going at pick 343 that if he somehow doesn't get platoon and plays 145, 150, like that's a big what if. I know we're saying that here, but if he goes and hits 275, gets you seven home runs, he could steal you 35 plus base. Like there's a world where he runs completely wild on that. So just want to throw him out there. Like he's not like a hardcore target of mine, but if you're looking for something late or even I think he's an interesting draft and hold play for that kind of reason. Mangum shouldn't get completely poo-pooed with the Walkers and Smiths of this pocket.
Yeah, and the Rays did let Mangum go crazy on the base pass and was successful 82% of the time. So he rewarded the Rays in doing so. Just know you're getting like potentially zero home runs with Jake Mangum.
It's a two-category guy.
Yeah.
You're getting average and steals.
Yeah, like I don't even know if you're getting many runs or RBI with this guy, but yeah, I mean that's two very good categories.
So just something to think about as you get deeper. And like again, not a main target of mine by any means, but there will be weeks I know I will be putting bids into stream Jake Mangum. I will guarantee you that. So we'll see. All right. 86 through 90. ADP 356 through 380.
And the Charlotte Hornets.
Yes.
Point guard, Jeff McNeil.
Jeff McNeil, who is going to play second base in Sacramento. Can I entice you at all? Nick Castellanos, who still is on a team, but the team doesn't want him. So that is just an ugly divorce. Lars Nootbaar, who this one, he confuses me every draft I'm in. Gavin Sheets and Jonathan India. This is a pocket of what used to be is what I'll say.
Yeah, though I do like McNeil. I mean, we've talked some McNeil, especially with the move to Sacramento, the second base outfield, and on our pull hitter crossover show, some of the pull tendencies that McNeil has. I think that could play and maybe take the over of, you know, mid upper teens home runs, optimistically with a good batting average. I don't know. It's not. Yeah. Castellanos, like, yeah, not, I mean, not gonna, not a starter.
When you put lipstick on a pig, Ryan, it's still a pig.
Yeah. Gavin Sheets, I mean, for as fun as clean the sheets were, now we've got share your sheets in the Discord.
Yes, share your sheets. That's for Discord After Dark.
Yeah. Share your sheets channel in the Discord where we take screenshots of our draft sheets, which is pretty cool. I don't know. We had our fun with Gavin Sheets last year, but. Like, I don't know, above average power. It's just a streamer. It's above average power, batting average that won't kill you, but won't really do anything else. So this is not someone I don't think you want. And not really that high of a ceiling. I think that's the other thing, at least in Fab Leagues. You want to shoot for higher ceilings than anything any of these guys have to offer.
Yeah, that's kind of my thing. I'd like to be done drafting outfielders by this point in the draft. Like Sheets, I will love to stream Sheets. I'm with you there 100% of the time. My guy I just can't figure out is Lars Nootbaar. Like it seemed like he was always going to be great. He just can't stay healthy. But it's like you look at him, he's projected to hit cleanup on this Cardinals lineup. Now, if that's a great thing, who knows?
Wow.
Again, yeah. But it's just like, I'm looking at ADP 373. This is once going to be this guy, and it's not there. So I get tempted to take him every draft. I could see, like, out of this whole range, to me, he's got the biggest upside in this range, to me. But, yeah, it's bad all around.
It's kind of interesting. Like, Nootbaar last year had a 10% barrel rate above average. League average is, like, 8.5%. Hit the ball in the air, 45% fly ball rate. 13 homers and 583 plate appearances. Like he did nothing last year despite piling up a ton of PAs. So I don't know, man. Yeah, I guess I can squint and see some upside for Nootbaar, but he finally stayed healthy last year and just did nothing with it.
That's fair. Not so silent majority says, does Castellanos get traded? If so, does it matter? So this is the latest and greatest. And I knew this even before the Phillies pod. They have been trying to trade him. There's really no suitors because I think everybody knows they're trying to trade him and the offer is probably extremely low at this point. So there's a great chance by opening or by spring training, he's released. They're just going to say, screw it. you're gone. Like he, it is highly unlikely he is a Philadelphia Philly. Like over by 90%, he is not a Philly next year, because he's not going to sit on the bench and they're not going to start him. So they're trying to get whatever they can for him right now. And that's like, if I'm the Giants, I'm like, hey, what single A pitcher do you want? Like, I'm down. Give him a shot. Like, I still think Cassidy's got stuff in him. That's the thing. He just has no job right now. But, like, if you dig into Castellanos' profile, like, I've drafted him in some drafts and also, I mean, I know what I'm doing. But, like, the dude's got 17 or more home runs in four of the last 5 years. He still had 72 runs in RBI. He's hit 250. Like, his quality of contact was still just fine, 7.6%. It's been kind of in line with three of the last four seasons. Like, you'd like it to be better, but this is who he is, and it's still serviceable right now. He's just burned so many bridges with Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, what if he ends up on the White Sox, Marlins, yeah. Rockies, like whatever? There is some
very good.
Yeah, yeah, because he actually does produce in fantasy, in real life baseball, of course not. And he's paid $20 million. I mean, that's the elephant in the room here too. Is this is basically at some point just going to be a salary dump for?
It's going to be an Arenado trade pretty soon.
And the problem with that is like the Rockies aren't going to eat Nick Castellanos' salary. So it's a little bit, I don't know.
It comes down, you have to give him a better prospect to have the Phillies eat the salaries. Right. So that's where the negotiations are getting stalled back and forth, it feels like.
And yeah, Michael Chasko says, Adolis sealed the fate for Castellanos with the Phillies. I agree with that. Writing was on the wall there.
Yep. So like, I still think fantasy-wise, offensively, Castellanos, I think, still has a lot of potential at 370 if he gets to the right spot, but it's like I have zero clue where and when that's happening. Like Boston should see what they can get for him with that monster in left. Like I think it's maybe. Actually I
think it's viable. Have to run,
yeah, because his defense is horrible. Like Adelis is a massive improvement on him. That's the other reason they went and got Garcia and told Casty to see ya. You got that monster. We saw Manny out there. You don't have to be freaking great by any means. So
that was exciting. I like watching Manny.
I don't know how he has had a 5-minute Castellanos conversation.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, this is
you know what part of the show this is?
This is only, not to compare ourselves to other podcasts, but who else goes 5-6 minutes deep on Nick Castellanos?
ADP 370 Nick Castellanos. Yep, we're here for you.
For better or worse, I'm not saying this is a good thing. This is not a good thing.
All right, so that wraps up part 3, 61 through 90. We'll get some listener questions here before we get our final thoughts, Ryan, because I think I need a little refresher after that Castellanos portion of the show.
Can I go shower and come back?
Yeah, I feel real dirty at the moment.
A lot of chatter in the show questions today, so you may stumble on this one a little bit.
So like Mailman Mike, there's a whole Jung-Hoo Lee section. Mailman Mike says, is there another level to Lee? If the two of you could build... All right, wait, so we'll stop. Well,
actually, the funniest thing in show questions, I had originally totally screwed this up and put ERA, whip, and strikeout.
I was trying not to bring that to the masses for you. I was being nice, see?
Discord, Matt, shout out Matt.
He caught it.
Found it for us.
So is there another level to Lee? Sure, but it's like 15-50. Like, the level's not that high. It's a really good floor play. He's a poor man, Stephen Kwan. Like, it's lazy. He'll hit for average. There's just not a lot of power and speed.
Very poor man's, I think. And this is the, I remember.
You like Kwan.
Yeah, I do. I like Kwan probably more than others, but this is also the other. We may have a listener question on this too, but this is what Dustin McComas has kind of been talking about a little bit on Bench with Bubba and also on the Pull Hitter podcast. It's just like, and the data kind of bears it out. Last year, it could be a one-off, whatever, was the least correlation between plate appearances and hitting points, fantasy hitting points of the last few recent years. And Jung-Hoo Lee is kind of the poster boy for that, at least in Dustin's mind, of just someone who's playing every day, but you end up with not much. So you get those plate appearances, but how good are they?
This is a loaded question. Mailman Mike, I'm sorry. I can't bring this one to the show. I don't have it in me, but I'll ask Ryan.
What is it? Come on.
If the two of you could build the perfect outfielder from all three shows, what would it be?
Ooh, that is tough.
Yeah.
I'm not
it's Aaron Judge.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to name players, but like, I definitely want to take one of that like top 8, top 10 outfielders from a while ago. And I want to have four of the top 200, and this bears that out. I think after 200, it's there's targets here and there, but you don't want to miss out on the goodness at the cream of the crop at outfield. Pick your spots up until pick 200 and hope you have four by then. That's just kind of how I would build it. Now the players and when and all that, your draft's going to dictate that.
And I will say, like, yes, we want our 2-2 philosophy, and then maybe one in this final pairing if we have to. But I will say, going over this last board, there is a lot of good, like, risky picks that I don't mind. Like, take your chances. Realize that you might be dropping them, but nice risky chances. Like,
yeah,
there are some potential upside plays here. Like, go for the moon and see where, like, in a 12, I could see myself getting, like, a little goofy with some of these picks and seeing where it goes. So, yeah. John Wilder says, so many platoon bats in the MLB now, especially in the outfield. Do you try and avoid them or lean into the ones who can mash right-handed pitching? Sometimes as everyday players down here can actively hurt your average by playing so much. Yes, and your outfielder five, you embrace it.
Yeah, and that's where I kind of jumped the gun. But yeah, it was Wilder who brought that question up, and that's kind of what Dustin's been talking about too, is you embrace it. Like, I go back to the Jordan Walker versus Dominic Canzone or Jesus Sanchez. Like, give me the guy that produces when he's in.
Yep. Ben Bingham says, of all the positions that you've gone through, which one or ones are you most comfortable waiting on, especially in a fab league where you can find replacements in season?
So in a fab league, I'm fine waiting on outfield because there are replacements. I'm just trying to think back to our other shows. Like, I liked
catcher in outfield.
In terms of what? What you would want to wait on?
No, I don't mind. I don't mind fabbing a catcher too late if I have to.
Man, you like to live dangerously.
I'd prefer not to, but I know I can fab catch. At least in a 12-team league, I can fab catcher twos all season long.
Yeah. I'm thinking back to the first base and second base shows. Like, there were targets late that I did not mind at all. Even at third base. Actually, shortstop was the one where as relatively deep it is, they all go early and there's not much late. So probably second base, something like that. I'm fine waiting on, but fab in the infield is very tough.
Fab in the infield is tough.
Very tough.
That's why I kind of also said last episode, it's like, we want to have like two outfielders, hopefully two shortstops, two starting pitchers and a reliever, like in the first 10 rounds. So like, if you just listen to that statement out loud, that's 7 of your 10 picks. So have fun waiting on the other positions, basically.
Right.
So it's right there in the making for you.
But the other thing, too, with that, we will kind of look at the player pool in a different angle in probably sometime in February, mid-February, something like that, by doing our pockets of ADP. And that's really where – so we will look at all players going at pick 200 to 250 and just position-wise kind of get it. You get a better feel for doing it that way. And we'll be doing that in February.
Mastermind says, not relevant to these outfielders, but what do you make of Acuna's 11 stolen bases in 17 games over the winter? Cool. Glad to see him running.
Yeah. No, I mean, means he's healthy, and that means a lot. I know Baseball HQ ran a study, this was years ago, but like, the one important stat to take away from spring training outside of playing time for position battles is stolen base attempts. Yep. If your team's willing to run you, means you're healthy. And with Ronald Acuna, I'm sure the Braves have some input on whether or not.
I want to say, I was wondering how much input they have, but I would be
shocked if the Braves did not have any input on that. So I would assume this is, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I should not assume, but I would assume this is under the blessing of the Atlanta Braves. And it's, I think, a very good sign. I would take nothing else away from what Ronald Acuna does in the winter league, but if he's running, that's a very good sign that he's healthy and willing to go.
Yep. Our buddy Aaron Gifts says, good year to wait on outfielders, ? Don't wait too long.
Don't wait too long. Again, 200 for pick 200 for me. And in terms of auction, which we need to kind of, so there's a lot of good players in kind of that low teens dollar values that you can go. So yeah, draft 200.
Canton Dog says, Dylan Beavers, think his production at AAA last year will produce at the MLB level? Good late addition to your draft and hold. I believe so. It just comes down to playing time.
If you believe, Bubba, then I believe.
That's a scary thought for you. Grizzmania 99. Jordan Beck, does he have a shot at 2020 with playing time? Of course. Pulled the ball more last year. He hits a bunch of stats there. Yes, I do think he can go 2020. I liked him a lot last episode.
Yeah, we covered Beck on the last episode, and you made a very compelling case for Jordan Beck, actually.
This is where I'm going to go in all over the board. Nails says, thoughts generally on Gavin Sheets at this moment. He is only outfield eligible in NFBC. He is likely the Padres' top option at first base. Getting a player with 20 homers upside and a few chip and steals that would likely be first base outfield CI is pretty useful in a 15-team context. He will also likely hit fifth or seventh most nights in a decent lineup, so a decent play for runs and RBIs. Thoughts?
I just think a low-ceiling streamer for me. I mean, Gavin Sheets got hot the first half last year, 13 homers, 304 plate appearances. But he hit six homers in the second half, so that can quietly kill you. So
when you can't sleep at night because you have a newborn.
That's right. When did he have his kid? It was sometime
right around mid-season. Yeah.
Man, happens to the best of us.
Yep. Dustin Anderson says, and I love this because I kind of wanted to mention this, not really a show question, but I would draft Jacob Melton over a number of these guys. I 1,000% agree. I think if he could somehow get into the starting lineup with the Rays, and he's better than most of their options, Jacob Melton is extremely enticing.
Melton going at roughly around pick 480. And I mean, Colette on your Tampa Bay Rays preview show made a really good point. It's like the Rays paid up for Jacob Melton.
Exactly.
Are they going to pay up for a guy and stick him in AAA? Doesn't really make sense.
I'll ask you this just because I'm looking at the ADP right now. Like guys we didn't talk about, like Andrew Benintendi, would you take him over any of these guys we discussed towards the end?
In a draft and hold, I would take Benintendi over several of these guys just because the playing time and the floor is going to be there. In a fab league, like I like him more than like Jordan Walker, but I don't know if I'd go above like the Mullins, Victor Robles tier. I just think those guys have potential ceilings that Benintendi doesn't. But I have a lot of Benintendi.
Only other guy I'll throw out there because I don't want to throw out a million of them later on, but at least for people to think about. Jake McCarthy's going to play a lot in Colorado. He's going to hit for average, run wild. Like, he's another one of those kind of Mangum types. And his ADP is like 425. So,
yep.
That'd be one I would keep. I've been circling since he went to Colorado. I'm like, no, I'm actually quasi interested there. Smokey Joe says, which three players will have the most plate appearances? Are those players in the top five from this range?
I mean, typically, whoever has the most plate appearances will kind of just filter their way to the top. In terms of like playing time for these guys, I'd say like Jung-Hoo Lee is probably going to get the most plate appearances out of anybody on this list. Maybe TJ Friedl if he can stay healthy. But again, like I caution you to just go for playing time and only playing time because those guys, there's a very real risk. These are Gene Segura all-stars for you.
That is a great way to put it, actually. Gene Segura, All-Star 101s. SMMS79 says, what do you make of Stanton's batting average being above 233 for the first time since 2021? Finally healthy or fool's gold? I kind of want to say a little of both, if that's fair. I want to say kind of healthy because they kept almost bringing him back. They waited a long time to bring him back. So it felt like he was, I guess, healthier than he's been. I don't know what bar that sets. he also had a massive BABIP, which was the highest since 2021 as well.
Yeah, I would imagine Stanton is around the projection of like a 230 batting average. So you did sell me pretty good on him. Last show it was the law dog, and now it's double tennis elbow. So
just at that ADP, like what if he just somehow plays and like there's 50 home runs in that bat if God forbid he stays healthy. Like it's crazy.
Yep.
Not saying it's going to happen, but it could. B. Welch says, which players this range finish with the most home runs and stolen bases? Bonus points for player with the highest combined home runs and steals. Well, to me, Stanton has the most home runs. And you want to go Crawford with steals? Or?
I would go Stanton for homers and probably go Josh Lowe probably. I'm just sticking my neck out, sticking my oblique out and hoping hoping he stays healthy, but outside of that, probably Justin Crawford or Robles.
I got Justin Crawford for steals. I'll go Stanton for Homer. But if you want to do a combo platter, it's between Josh Lowe and Cedric for me. I think I'm gonna go Cedric as the combo platter.
Yeah, I think Cedric.
Yeah, that's where my brain sits as well. All right, the question from the chat that you starred so kindly, Ryan, is Garrett Mitchell off your draft board? He has a share, folks.
Yeah, no, I might even have. I should probably look. I may even have multiple Garrett Mitchells. Just cheap. I don't know why I have multiple Garrett Mitchells. I don't think he's going to be very good or have a. I mean, Eric, you're the Brewers guy. Correct me if I'm wrong. I just think the path to playing time there is pretty tough. And then even if he does have playing time, the guy needs to prove he can stay healthy. So and then even prove that he's good. We don't even know that. So
we know he's good. You can stop that. I'm just kidding. I'm looking forward to him like having some breakout time, and I'm just gonna have so much fun on the weekly Thursday night shows with Garrett Mitchell. All right. Final thoughts, overall thoughts. I mean, I think we've said it enough. I'd hope people understand our overall thoughts by now, but if you want to reiterate it, go for it.
No, not really. Do you want to talk anyone else late on this board? Just throw some names out beyond this board.
So I mentioned Benny. I mentioned Jake McCarthy is a guy that I think at least in 15 should really be
McCarthy.
Paid attention to. I like that a lot.
Willie Castro guys. Technically is not on this, but he will rise into this list and also Jake, is second, third. Yeah.
Jake Meyer should play every day in center field for Houston. That's a lot of at-bats, a lot
Wenzel
of steals.
Perez. Wenzel Perez I always like. I've taken a good chunk of Wenzel Perez. He's going, I don't know, very late. I don't have the sheet
very,
in front of
very
me.
Very, very late.
Wenzel is going pick 422. So I think we had a question in the chat about Wenzel Perez. I really like him after this game.
Tim the Tool Man is outfield eligible.
Sure. Every show, Tim the Tool Man.
Yep. So you got that going for your boy, Lord Gurriel Jr. is out here.
Yeah, I have taken Gurriel in 2 draft and hold, just hoping you get a good last 6 weeks of the season. But yeah, Eric did ask, opinion on these players, outfield 5-6. Larnach, Jordan Walker, we talked about. Larnach, we didn't, but I don't think Wenzel Perez and Yastrzemski. I think Wenzel Perez is by far my pick out of those 4.
I'd probably go
maybe Yaz.
I was gonna go Yaz. That's what I was saying. Like I think I go Yaz there. I'm pretty confident in Yaz's playing time on the strong side in Atlanta.
Yep.
There are a lot of outfielders in Detroit. Like if Wenzel struggles at all, like remember Wenzel got called up last year because of injuries. So. It's not a given. He's just locked into his platoon playing time just yet. Yeah. Larnach, yeah. Again, like Brandon Warnham, the Twins show, he might not be a Twin for long. So that's a whole other question of where he ends up going.
Michael Chasko says, I'll be surprised if Jonathan India plays in the outfield again. I'll be surprised if Jonathan India plays.
Hey, Kevin Hastings pretty determined because the way they're paying him, he'll be playing a lot of second base. But yeah, outfield I think is out of the question, and it doesn't matter because he has the eligibility. We don't care about anything else in that regard.
Yeah.
But all right, we'll wrap it up there. The pain of this Bloom Board's late outfielder is complete. It actually, as usual, when we think it's gonna be really bad, it wasn't that bad. That's how it usually goes. Filter. But yeah, that wraps up the hitters. We'll get pitching going next week. Again, any final thoughts heading into the weekend? I'm gonna go out of town and play some golf this weekend. Don't know what you're up to.
I don't know either, but I'll do something. Hope everyone on the East Coast, Midwest, whatever. It sounds like this entire 2/3 of the country potentially is getting hit pretty hard by snow, ice, whatever. So hope you all get through it okay, stay safe, and have power in order to draft fantasy baseball teams perhaps while you're snowed in. But now hope everyone stays safe. Yeah, we're both in the clear on the West Coast. I know no one likes to hear that, but it's been actually really nice. So we're gonna do probably 3 starting pitcher episodes and then a reliever episode. So those will be those next 2 weeks. And then Listener League Listener League announcement,
reveals,
I guess.
Reveals.
There we go. Will be revealed on Friday. I should just stop talking at this point.
Yeah, it's all good. It's getting late. But thanks, y'all, for listening. We'll be back with you guys on Tuesday for starting pitching part one. If you are one of the paid members that said you're in the listener league, pay attention to the Patreon. You will get a reveal coming your direction. And the links should hopefully have them sometime this weekend or early next week, because those are being worked on. So all coming your way. But until then, follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm at BD Antrick, and this is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 312. Catch you all next time.